Jody McDonald. Sports Radio 66 and 101.9 FM.
The Fan.
Hour number two on a Saturday gathering with me, Jody McDonald, here on The Fan. Appreciate you tuning in. We'll restoke the phones in just a bit on the match, the Yanks, Jets, Giants, and the like. But we're going to take a couple minutes here and talk about one of the forerunners in the business that I am presently working in, and that's sports broadcasting. HBO has got a documentary coming up later this month entitled Glickman. And if I need to say more, I'm surprised that you're listening to this radio station and you would need me to say more than that. It's about the life and the career of one Marty Glickman, one of the greatest sports broadcasters of all time, and a guy who's in charge of the documentary, his first former producer for Marty Glickman, and a guy who knows him both inside and out is going to put this together, and we shall see the great work that HBO does later this month. Mr. James Friedman joins us here on The Fan. Jim, Jody McDonald here. How are you, bud?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on, Jody.
My pleasure. Thank you for coming on. How long did you know Marty?
I knew Marty when I was I worked for him. I was a senior in high school, and it's actually a fun story. I used to drive into Manhattan with my older brother and watch him produce Marty Glickman's late-night radio show on WNEW. Now, that was a bit of a groundbreaking show at the time because it was one of the first all-sports call-in shows in the nation. One day, I'm sitting in the booth, and my brother tells Marty he's been called up to the Army Reserves, and Marty will need to find another producer. Without missing a beat, Marty Glickman pointed right into the booth at me and said, "Jimmy can do it." And I turned around expecting to see another guy named Jimmy sitting there. There wasn't, and for the rest of that year, I produced his show. He taught me how to get the scores off the wires, write them up, schedule commercial screen calls, pretty heady stuff for a 17-year-old. But what I most remember about that time is that Marty Glickman never treated me like some high school kid.
Right.
He always treated me as his producer, which frankly gave me a professional confidence that I have to this very day.
And what year is this?
This is in the early 70s.
It was certainly a forerunner, and I don't know. Did you ever talk to Marty about the advent of 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, WFAN? This station was the first ever in the nation to go to it. Now they have hundreds of them across the country, some all live, some syndicated, some local, some national, and the like. Did you ever get a comment from Marty as to what he thought he helped beget?
You know, he didn't love that kind of forum for himself. What he loved is broadcasting games. To him, the game was the thing. I mean, one of the things Glickman, my movie, touches on is what a great athlete he was. And people don't know he was a great athlete because Marty Glickman never talked about his athletic achievements when he broadcast the game. For him, it was the game that the viewer wanted to see.
Did Marty think, and if you have an opinion, I'll take yours as well, that helped him at all, that helped him get in the door, the fact that he was a great athlete? Or, as you say, he never talked about it. He didn't talk about it on the air, and sounds like he didn't talk about it much off the air, but there might have been some people along the way that recognized what he had achieved in track and field and missed out on in track and field. Do you think that helped him out?
In terms of broadcasting, yes, because he said, because, first of all, to give the viewers just an idea about Marty Glickman's athletic achievements, he was All-Eastern, All-American football player at Syracuse University, and at one time, he was the third fastest sprinter in the world behind Jesse Owens and Ralph Metcalf, and made the U.S. 1936 Berlin Olympic team, which we'll probably get into that story in a minute. But what Marty said is that because he played the game and is credited as being the first successful jock-turned-sportscaster in the history of the medium, because he played the game, he was able to announce it as if he would say, you know, if Frank Gifford or Joe Namath scored a touchdown, it was as if he were scoring that touchdown. So he really was able to put himself on the field and have his voice carried to the fans and the audience.
We're talking to James Friedman, the producer of Glickman, the documentary coming up on HBO later this month about the life of broadcasting legend Marty Glickman. You touched on briefly on the story about him missing out on his chance to participate in the Olympics and the like. Some people would be turned off by that. That would think that they got screwed. Their life was just not what it should have been, and may have even been turned off from sports in general because of that. We know that's not the case with Marty. Give us details as to why.
You know, you're touching on a subject that I love. It's a great question. For me, the heart of the film is what happens when an 18-year-old's dreams are crushed by racism and prejudice.
Right.
Do they become bitter, or do they triumph in life? Well, Marty Glickman not only triumphed, but he used sports as a means of transcending divisions created by race, class, and religion. And in fact, the other Jewish runner who was not allowed to run in the 36 Olympics, Sam Stoller, and by the way, was told on his 21st birthday, happy birthday, Marty felt that he never truly recovered from that. And Marty Glickman would not let anything get him down. He had a lot of obstacles in his life that he overcame, and he overcame all of them.
I can speak to this somewhat because my father was in professional sports. And growing up, I knew I wanted to be in professional sports. My lack of talent dictated that it wasn't going to be on the playing end. But at some point, I knew I was going to have to find an avenue, a way to be in and around sports. And for me, it became broadcasting. Marty was that athlete who then turned it into a broadcasting career and the like. Was it just the love of sports, the love of competition? What drove Marty to become one of the legendary broadcasters of all time?
You know, when he learned that he was not, he played minor league football after the Olympics, and he realized, you know, he led that league in rushing, and he had a chance to try out for the New York Giants, with Wellington Mara owned at the time. And his wife said, look, you've just started your broadcasting career. Stay with that. And as Marty jokingly says, you know, he's glad he did, because you never get belted broadcasting. So Marty truly revolutionized the medium. Just to give viewers an understanding, as a basketball radio play-by-play announcer, Marty Glickman coined the following phrases that are used today by so many sportscasters who don't know where they came from. The key, the lane, the elbow, the top of the circle, the midcourt stripe, and his most famous expression, swish. But what Marty Glickman truly did on radio was give listeners the geography of the court. Before Marty Glickman, a broadcast would be McDonald passes to Friedman, Friedman passes to Smith, he scores. You didn't know where anyone was. Right. Marty would announce it as McDonald dribbles up along the right sideline, throws a bounce pass to the top of the key to Friedman. Friedman throws a behind-the-back pass into the left corner to Smith, who hits a one-handed bank shot. You saw the court, and as Larry King said, Marty was television on radio.
His attention to detail, as you're describing here, is certainly part of what made Marty Glickman an all-time great.
Yes, Mike Breen has a great quote about him announcing basketball. He said it was like his voice was attached to the ball.
That is a great quote. Not surprised it comes from Breeny. What else would you put in there? Because there are lots of guys that can just talk well and describe a play and know for detail and exactly what they should put into it. But in having talked with many of the guys who worked for and around and with Marty, I only had the pleasure of meeting him a couple times, never worked with him, never worked for him and the like. What did some of the other people that, and you had your own personal relationship, but those that you've talked to, and I'll give you a chance to talk about all the people that are going to be involved in this, what was it they said that made Marty different?
As an announcer or as a person?
As an announcer.
As an announcer, it was his economy of words. He did not like announcers who used too many words. And his poetry of his language, and Bob Costas in the film says there was a vibrancy to a Marty Glickman broadcast. So, you know, if Y.A. Tittle of the Giants, that may be before many of your listeners' time, but if he, you know, ran off the field and he was angry, you know, Marty didn't say that. Marty said, you know, and Y.A. is jumping up and down, stomping his feet like a little kid who had been refused some candy. I mean, it's poetic to come up with that in the moment. And by the way, just some of the people in the film: Marv Albert, Bill Bradley, Mike Breen, Jim Brown, Bob Costas, Jerry Stiller, Larry King, Oscar Robertson, Elliot Gould, David Stern, and Frank Gifford. And when I interviewed Frank Gifford, I brought along a tape of Marty Glickman doing a game and played a little sequence where Gifford caught a couple of passes. And Gifford had this huge smile on his face, and I said, "Well, what's going on?" And he said, "You have to understand something. I've never heard this." Because back then in the early 60s, there was no way to hear a broadcast again that went out over the radio. So since Gifford was playing, he had never heard Marty Glickman broadcast his games. This was the first time, and it was thrilling.
That's a great story. So now answer the second half that you provided for me. What made Marty different and or great as a person?
I think the fact that what happened to him in Berlin, where he was denied the chance to run, due to out-and-out racism and prejudice, I think it affected him in a way that Marty Glickman believed in the purity of sports and in the purity of helping people. I mean, he not just there's a whole section of the film on all the great announcers he mentored, and many of them are in the film, but he gave his time to anybody. I mean, Charlie Steiner, the Dodger announcer, told me a story where Marty called him up. He didn't know Marty Glickman and said, "I heard one of your broadcasts. What are you doing tomorrow afternoon?" And Charlie couldn't believe it was Marty and said, "Wherever you want me to be." And he said, "Bring over some tapes. We'll listen to them." And Charlie said he learned more in those 3 hours than he had learned in the previous 15 years of his career. Marty also was an incredible advocate of helping the youth of the city. He created the high school game of the week, but not just for the high school athletes. At halftime, he'd bring on the cheerleaders or the glee club or the chess club or the debating team. And he also worked extensively with the police athletic league. If you looked in the dictionary under the word mensch, you're going to see Marty's picture.
We're talking to James Friedman, who is the producer, executive producer, the guy who is in charge of the documentary Glickman, which airs, makes its debut on HBO coming up later this month, Monday, August 26th, to be exact, 9 to 10:30.
Yes, Eastern. It's also in the Quad Theater in Greenwich Village in New York City right now, playing at 1 and 7. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm Glickman the Film. On my website's glickmanthefilm.com, and on Facebook, it's also Glickman the Film. There's a lot of clips from the movies and from the movie and pictures of Marty and stories that I tell in that.
Two more questions for you. And again, appreciate everything you've given us already here today.
No problem, Jody.
About the clips, that's what makes it. HBO is the best at what they do, and I'm sure you had a ton of help here, but we understand that this is your baby, but they just are the best at television in any aspect, and certainly in the world of sports. You've already run down a list of iconic contributors that you have, but the footage has got to be a big part of this. Did you have it? Did you have to go find it? How did you procure it? How did you get what you needed to put it together?
People ask, how long did it take to make the film? And I said, it took a year to make it and 2 years to find and beg for free footage. So, you know, I was a history major in college, which really helped me because there was so much research involved. And it was basically just me. I did everything on this film. I remember Jerry Stiller, I was interviewing him, and he said, could you have your people get me a copy of Marty's book before you interview me? And I said to him, I am my people. So I drove it over to him. Anyway, you know, what's great about the footage, and you deal with all these archivists at these different companies who really are wonderful people because they are protecting the history of their organizations. And one of the great things is, I watched the Olympic footage. I found some Hearst newsreels of the Olympic team, and you're talking about 500-600 people arriving in Berlin. And in 1 second, they actually had footage of Marty Glickman and Sam Stoller on the bus arriving in Berlin. And it's like you hit the lottery, and you just said, this is unbelievable. I actually can show him right there. The other story that was great about footage, some of the archivists, you know, who knew Marty Glickman, they would go above and beyond and say, listen, a lot of things get mislabeled. Let me look and see what I have. This one guy at Paramount Newsreels found a very grainy black and white videotape of the 35 millimeter nitrate film that they had, and he said, I don't even know what this is, but it could be Marty Glickman. I had to wait 6 months to transfer the nitrate film, which can explode and blow up.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be this crystal clear race Marty Glickman ran in high school that I was able to put in the film. And you go crazy. You're so excited. And you just have to remember, when viewers see the film for the first time and they see that footage, they'll be just as excited as you.
All right. And here is my last question. And you may or may not have an answer to it. I'm really intrigued as to find out if you do. It, as you say, years in the making, collecting it and then putting together and doing all the interviews and the editing and everything together, and you finally have the finished product in front of you, and this is what you know you're going with and handing to the bosses at HBO, and I'm sure they're involved in the whole process, but at some point somebody says a yay or a nay. When you get what you believe you have the finished product in your hand, did you say to yourself, what would Marty think of this?
You know, I didn't say that, but... I did do this. Marty believed in economy of words, so when I wrote the narration, I made it a point to say everything I could say in as few words as possible, because that's how he would want it. He was not a man who was a very, you know, plain-spoken man in terms of the title itself, Glickman. It's very simple and straightforward, just like Marty was straightforward and to the point. So he affected what I was doing, and the reason I made the film, by the way, you know, when I moved to St. Louis for college at Washington University and then went out to California, people would sit around and say, what's the greatest job you ever had? And I said, well, I was once Marty Glickman's radio producer when I was 17 years old. And they met me with the answer of, who's Marty Glickman? And I couldn't believe that outside of New York, people didn't know who he was. And I wanted to make the movie so people would learn about this man's incredible life. And I'm very proud of the film, and I think Marty would be absolutely thrilled. And I get that from, you know, Marv Albert, who was mentored by Marty, and Bob Costas. They all told me this, and that was praise beyond anything I could have dreamed of.
All right. Now, do you have the bug? Is this going to be the first of
yes,
many yet to come James Friedman documentaries?
Yes, it is. You know, I don't know if you're listening to know, but Martin Scorsese came on this project, you know, as the executive producer to release it through his company on HBO. And, you know, that was one of the biggest thrills of my life. So I am going to be making more things, and I will call you as soon as we get them ready.
Please do so, James. We appreciate the fact that you called us today. It's coming up. Debuts Monday, August 26th, with many a re-air on HBO. But if you are a sports fan and you're young, if you're 25 or older, you recognize the name Glickman. If you're 25 or younger, you need to watch this to learn, because he is one of the all-time greats, and James Friedman did a great job of bringing him to life for HBO. James, thanks for coming on with us.
Thanks, Jody. I appreciate it.
That is James Friedman, the producer for the documentary Glickman, which airs on HBO later this month, going on in through September.